Hello, my name's Simon, and I'll be your narrator for this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, dated 1st of July 2020. Welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sight Loss Charity, Beacon Centre, for the sight loss community. Unfortunately, due to the unprecedented impact of COVID-19 and updated government guidance, Talking News currently cannot be distributed in CD format. The health and safety of our staff, volunteers and listeners is our main priority, and therefore we have taken the difficult decision not to distribute CDs to our loyal listeners until further notice and safe to do so. We are sorry for any inconvenience caused during this time. We are pleased to inform you that the Talking News service is continuing as an online podcast. This will be available via our website each week. The direct link can be found on our social media pages. You can also stream our Talking News service on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the British Wireless for the Blind application, and on the podcast section of the Black Country Radio website. Simply search for Beacon Black Country Talking News and subscribe to the podcast. Whilst the coronavirus pandemic continues, we will not be reporting on any community events due to cancellations and postponements. Thank you for bearing with us at this challenging time. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. We move into July on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition we have Christine, Pete, Mina, Ian, Helen, Talking Book Steve, Flashback Roger and New Voice Sharon, Angela and of course me, Simon. This week we have a roundup of local news, our weekly quiz, our regular Talking Book review. We hear from one of Beacon's employment coordinators, Sharon, on living with sight loss during lockdown. Our flashback section where we look at this week in history, reports on the Wolves and West Bromwich Albion, the weather for the weekend and next week, an update from Beacon, plus our weekly brain teaser. Let's start now with Ian and Angela on the local news, but first up, it's Christine.
An aerospace manufacturer is planning to make more than 250 redundancies at its sites in Wolverhampton after the air industry took a huge blow from the coronavirus pandemic. Collins Aerospace, a subsidiary of US corporation Raytheon Technologies, has two sites very close to each other in the north of Wolverhampton. It has its actuation systems factory at Stafford Road, the former Lucas plant, and a power and control systems operation, HS Marston Aerospace, accessed off nearby Wobberston Road. The company, which produces high-tech aerospace systems, also plans redundancies at its sites in Marston Green, Birmingham, and Banbury in Oxfordshire. Around 170 jobs are expected to be cut at the Stafford Road site. It is believed to be proposing 170 redundancies at Stafford Road and 85 at Wobberston Road.
Dudley Council looks set to become the latest local authority to declare a climate emergency. The local authority's ruling cabinet will discuss proposals and are likely to create a group tasked with developing and implementing plans to reduce the borough's carbon footprint. Its first task will be to look at whether emergency measures imposed as a result of the coronavirus pandemic, which have seen staff working from home, should be adopted longer term. The group will be made up of councillors from both parties and council officers. It will consider what is in the council's scope, and future measures could include rolling out a business recycling service or building new energy-efficient homes. Council bosses say they are committed to reducing carbon emissions and are moving to put measures in place in preparation for the matter to be discussed at a future full council meeting.
Dudley Council is backing a national day of celebration to mark the birthday of the NHS. The milestone is on Sunday, July the 5th, and will be exactly 72 years since the National Health Service was created in 1948. Dudley Council in Priory Road is currently flying a rainbow thank you flag for NHS and key workers. It is also being lit up in blue and green every night to mark the contribution of NHS and care staff and key workers during the coronavirus pandemic. The flag will continue to fly up to and on July the 5th, and the building will be lit up. And council bosses are also urging borough residents to join in with an applause for one final clap for carers.
Visitor numbers at Maryhill Shopping Centre increased on the first weekend all non-essential shops were allowed to reopen. Gavin Pryor, Operations Director at Intu, said footfall at Intu Maryhill increased towards the end of last week and visitor numbers were up by 321% on last weekend across all Intu centres, with more than half of stores now open. We have welcomed well over 1 million visitors in total to Intu centres across the UK, and the safety measures we have introduced are working well. People are visiting us on shopping missions, determined to spend money in their favourite shops, and many stores have told us that basket sizes are up on last year, with several big ticket purchases such as high-end jewellery. Fashion brands like Primark, Next and H&M have all been really popular, with a regular flow of shoppers. Visitors tell us they're excited to be out shopping again and feel safe at Intu Maryhill due to the measures we have in place. Research we undertook during lockdown showed that returning to the shops was high on people's agenda, and we are now seeing that play out. As more brands reopen over the next few weeks, we expect visitor numbers to continue to grow.
Pub group Marston's today said it was uncertain about its financial outlook in the short term, following a roughly £40 million hit to sales from the coronavirus lockdown. The Wolverhampton-based company, which is preparing to reopen pubs across the West Midlands on July the 4th, has posted an underlying pre-tax profit of £9.4 million for the 6 months ended March the 28th, compared to £34.2 million last year. Its underlying revenue also dropped from £553.1 million to £510.5 million over the same period. To combat the impact from the coronavirus outbreak, Marston's has furloughed over 13,000 employees, cut management pay, and suspended dividend payments this year. The company said it had reduced debt by £39 million to £1.38 billion, excluding lease liabilities, as of March the 2nd. It comes as Marston's is set to combine its brewing business with Carlsberg UK. It said the partnership with Carlsberg UK provides a strong platform for post-pandemic recovery. Marston's Pubs chief Ralph Findlay said he expects it will reopen 80 to 85% of its 1,400 premises from July the 4th after being given the go-ahead to open sites with 1 metre plus distancing in place. He added, "I welcome the news. If 2 metre distancing had stayed in place, we would have only been able to reopen about 25% of our pubs. This is a positive step, but I think there is also now a case for some kind of stimulus to help consumer spending."
Shoppers can continue to take advantage of the suspension on parking charges at all Dudley Council-owned car parks until August 1st. It is hoped the free parking extension will help frontline staff and enable people to support local businesses during the coronavirus crisis. People with parking season tickets will see payments suspended for an additional month. Dudley Council originally suspended all town centre parking charges in March due to the coronavirus pandemic. The decision was taken in addition to the council's existing offer of 2 hours free parking during the day and free parking overnight, which remains in place. All other parking conditions still apply, such as permitted duration for a short and long stay car parks, and penalty charges notices will continue to be enforced.
Thanks, Angela. There's more local news to follow shortly, but now here's Mina with this week's quiz.
Another test on events that happen on this week in history. The answers will be in our flashback section coming up later in this week's Black Country Talking News. Are you ready? Here we go. Question one. How many hot dogs did Walter Paul eat in a hot dog eating contest on 30th of June 1967? Question two. Who starred in the long-running show The King and I? Question three. What was the surname of the man who invented M&Ms? Question four. In what year, on July the 3rd, was the first public demonstration of colour television? Question 5. What was the real name of Lewis Carroll, author of Alice in Wonderland? And finally, question 6. In what year, on July the 6th, was the Beatles film Hard Day's Night first screened? Keep listening for the answers. If you miss them, we'll let you know all the answers at the end of this week's edition. Good luck!
Thanks, Mina. Time for some more local news now with Ian.
Part of construction giant Carillion's old headquarters is said to be turned into shared offices, with work underway on its refurbishment. Two floors of the former Carillion House building on Salop Street in Wolverhampton will become part of a Regus franchise and will offer more than 260 workplaces. Carillion went bust in January 2018, causing around 2,400 direct job losses and a huge knock-on effect to contractors across the industry. Now its former headquarters will become home to the Shared Workspace Company, which offers a range of services for businesses, including equipped offices and meeting rooms, from October. The site and its separate car park located near the area are to be redeveloped as part of the £55 million West Side Regeneration Scheme.
City of Wolverhampton Council has teamed up with Wolverhampton Wanderers to celebrate how residents and businesses have come together in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. The council and the club have joined forces to release a short film called Project Relight. The film centres around the city motto, "Out of darkness cometh light," reflecting on recent challenging times, while also looking ahead to brighter days. It features footage of NHS staff and key workers, and includes appearances from Wolves head coach Nuno Espirito Santo, singer Beverly Knight, and City Council leader Councillor Ian Brookfield.
The face of Dudley is changing, and a new video showcases the near £1 billion regeneration programme set to transform the town centre over the next decade. The 5-minute video takes viewers on a fly-through tour of the town centre via tram, stopping off at the major developments coming to the town on the way. Put together by architects Corstafine and Wright, with the theme of regenerating Dudley and the strapline "It's Our Time," it features the new £31 million Dudley Leisure Centre, the £450 million Wensbury to Briley Hill Metro Extension, the £82 million Portersfield Residential Retail and Leisure Development on the former Cavendish House site, the new Dudley Town Centre £20 million bus and tram transport interchange, improvements to both Dudley Zoo and the Black Country Living Museum, the £28 million Very Light Rail National Innovation Centre, the £26.8 million Black Country and Marches Institute of Technology.
Work on two multi-storey hospital car parks designed to ease parking on surrounding roads will start next month. New car parks will be built at Sandwell General and Birmingham City Hospitals, increasing capacity by around 1,000 across the two sites. The hospitals have been plagued by parking problems over the years, with staff, patients and visitors often leaving cars on side streets, to the frustration of residents due to a lack of spaces. Both hospitals will be scaled down when the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital opens in Smethwick in 2022. However, a new medical centre is being built at the Sandwell Hospital site in West Bromwich, further increasing the need for parking spaces. The Midland Met will become Sandwell and West Birmingham's primary healthcare facility when it finally opens in 2022 at a cost of more than £1 billion to build and run. It emerged earlier this month that the coronavirus pandemic could lead to even more delays on the new hospital, which was supposed to open in 2018.
Stourbridge Crematorium will close at the end of July for 4 months to allow urgent refurbishment works to be carried out. Crematorium will close on the afternoon of Friday, 31st of July, and reopen at the start of December. Papers set to go before Dudley Council's ruling cabinet reveal. The works will see the cremators on the South Road site replaced with machines being installed to accommodate larger coffins. A small extension to the crematorium will be built on the side to accommodate the new cremators. The seating capacity within the chapel will also increase, and a new canopy built at the front. The number of other improvements are also being carried out as part of the £2 million works.
Three beauty spots in a Black Country borough are to be spruced up thanks to an investment of almost £17,000 by council bosses. Dudley Council will spend the cash renovating Netherton Park in Netherton, Marsh Park in Briley Hill and Huntingtree Park in Howes Owen. Nearly £7,000 is to be spent at Huntingtree Park, replacing all of the bins which are rusted and beyond repair. The cash will also pay for a new net for the tennis court, a boot scraper for footballers and a picnic bench with wheelchair access. At Marsh Park, more than £6,000 will be spent on replacing corroded litter bins. Money has also been set aside for three new war memorial benches. At Netherton Park, £3,870 will be spent on a new handrail for the long winding stairs from the park's rose garden leading down to the nursery, and the replacement of three litter bins. The funding comes from Section 106 payments made by housing developers who agree to put forward cash to offset any increased usage of local facilities.
Thanks, Christine. Now, last week we set you a brain teaser and it's time to reveal the answer. How many times can you subtract 1 from 25? So, where's the catch? Here's Pete to reveal all.
Well, let me tell you, Simon. How many times you can subtract 1 from 25 is once. Once is the answer. You can subtract 1 from 25 once only because it then becomes 24. So the answer is once.
Cheers, Pete. Thinking about it, it actually is. And I got that too as well, can I just say? Because you then start taking 1 away from 24, which isn't 25, so it's got to be once, I think. This week's brain teaser coming up later, but now let's return to the local news with Angela.
Residents are being reminded there are lots of ways to contact Dudley Council online, despite limited essential face services opening up at Customers Contact Centre. Dudley Council Plus is open for people to have limited face-to-face visits. It is part of easing measures at the council in line with the government gradual lifting of the coronavirus pandemic lockdown. Online contact with the council has soared in recent months as the centre shut its doors temporarily as the country went into lockdown. Now, Dudley Council Plus in Castle Street, Dudley, is open from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday to Friday to offer people essential face-to-face contact with a limited number of staff. Measures are in place at the centre to force social distancing and people are being asked to wear face masks or coverings in line with the latest government advice. Face-to-face services include scanning and receiving evidence, right to buy housing applications, returning keys, tenancy termination, emergency homelessness, and others which cannot be done via any other means.
Street lights across Wolverhampton are set to become greener as LED lights are installed. Work has started on installing 27,570 LED streetlights, which will replace existing sodium lamps across the city. It forms the first phase of the city's new £5.8 million smart lighting scheme, which aims to make savings of around £1 million per year. The LED replacements will also reduce carbon emissions by more than 5,600 tonnes a year and save 6,642 kilowatts per hour of energy, according to the council. The project has been co-funded by the council and a grant of £2,403,136 from the European Regional Development Fund, ERDF. Further phases will involve a partnership with the Canal and River Trust to install solar lighting along stretches of the canal, allowing it to be used for longer by cyclists and pedestrians. Other works include residential on-street charging points for electrical vehicles installed in locations across the city, with monitors showing the amount of cycle journeys and the reduction in CO2 emissions.
In Dudley Borough, nearly 90% of streetlights on main roads have now been converted to LED, a report has revealed. Dudley Council's cabinet will be told a scheme to replace all lights on main roads and make them more energy efficient is on course to be completed by the end of August. Nearly 6,000 streetlights on main roads in the borough have now been converted, while more than 600 lanterns have been purchased for installation as part of the final phase of the project. LED lighting costs less to run, is considered more effective, and is also flexible, as it can be dimmed at certain times of the night.
Wolverhampton has been named among the bottom 30% of unhealthy high streets in a new report. The city was ranked 58th out of 82 cities and large towns in the UK in terms of how healthy its high street is. Cities and towns were ranked on a series of factors, including how close gyms, leisure centres, green spaces, vegan restaurants, museums and pubs were to the high street. Wolverhampton was marked down for how many takeaways, betting shops, vape shops and pawnbrokers were populating the centre, plus the lack of green space in the immediate vicinity of the high street, as well as the lack of libraries and museums. Points were also lost for a number of fast food restaurants. The city came between Derby and Wigan on the list compiled by mortgage company Bankrate. York was named as having the healthiest high street in the country, with Peterborough labelled as the most unhealthy. Nowhere else in the Black Country or South Staffordshire was included on the list, as the cities and towns all have populations above 100,000. Bankrate said, "Our analyst discovered that the average house price in the cities that scored highly in our index was £319,691,000. At the other end of the scale, the house prices in the cities with the high street that scored badly averaged out at £216,200. The difference in house prices highlights a correlation between having a healthy high street and the value of a home. In fact, homes with a healthy high street nearby were valued at around average £103,491,000 more."
54 people were made redundant as estate agent Andrew Grant went into administration and closed offices across the West Midlands. The Stourbridge office is one of the branches to have closed. Only 18 jobs were saved in a pre-pack deal for the lettings and property management part of the company and the brand name of Andrew Grant, which had been going for nearly 50 years. The joint administrators from RSM agreed a deal with managing partner Christian Stott and Chief Financial Officer Joanna Munro, supported by independent investors Peter Bloomer and Scott Robinson Brown. Andrew Grant Sales, which has the same four directors, has acquired the existing residential sales agreements and will continue to provide services to those customers. Founder Andrew Grant said, "I am extremely supportive of the new ownership and am confident that it is in the safest of hands. I wish them all the best."
As lockdown continues to ease, businesses and building owners are reminded to check the maintenance of their premises as they reopen. Dudley Council's environmental health team are warning businesses of an increased risk of Legionella bacteria being present as a result of water systems not being used during the lockdown period. Legionnaire's disease can be contracted by breathing in small droplets of water suspended in the air, which contain Legionella bacteria. Symptoms include fever, a non-productive cough, and pneumonia. The disease can be more serious in men aged over 50, smokers and people with chronic lung disease and weak immune systems. It does not spread from person to person. People who manage or own buildings are being asked to follow the latest advice from the Chartered Institute of Environmental Health and the Health and Safety Executive to help minimise the risk from Legionella as they prepare to reopen following the lockdown period. It includes flushing through cold water systems with fresh mains water, as well as increasing the temperature of hot water systems to above 60 degrees centigrade, if possible, to achieve thermal disinfection of the hot water system. This should be undertaken as a part of a thorough risk assessment and may require other works to be done.
Thanks, Ian. Our final local news roundup to follow shortly, but now it's time for our regular Talking Book review with Talking Book Steve.
Hello everybody and welcome to this week's audio book review in the Black Country Talking newspaper. Recently we had a request from one of our regular listeners who themselves are an avid audiobook listener to see if we wouldn't mind reviewing a particular audiobook which they've themselves listened to or are listening to at the moment so that we could share with the rest of our wonderful audience how great a book it is. And the audiobook itself is Signed, Sealed and Delivered, The Soulful Journey of Stevie Wonder. This is narrated by Kevin R. Free. It's about 12 hours and 45 minutes long, so you'll certainly get your money's worth. And as you may expect, it's about the great man himself. This is the first definitive biography of music legend Stevie Wonder. And his achievements as a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist and producer are extraordinary. During a career that spanned almost 50 years, he's earned more than 30 top 10 hits, 26 Grammy Awards, and a place in both the Rock and Roll and Songwriter Halls of Fame. And he's not finished yet. On the verge of turning 60, he is still composing, he's still touring, and he's still attracting dedicated fans from all over the globe. So, for the first time, Signed, Sealed and Delivered takes an in-depth look at Stevie Wonder's life and his evolution from kid soul pop star into a mature artist whose music has helped lay the groundwork for the evolution of hip-hop and rap. The audiobook explores the life, achievements and influence of one of America's greatest musical icons, set against the history of Motown and the last 50 years of popular music. Based on extensive interviews with Motown producers, music executives, songwriters, musicians, including founding Temptation, Otis Williams, Mickey Stevenson, surviving funk brother Eddie Willis, synthesizer genius Malcolm Cecil, guitar legend Michael Cembalo, and many, many others. The book traces Stevie's personal and musical development through the decades, from the early 60s, R&B of Fingertips, to the social and political themes of Living for the City and other 70s classics, through periods of musical and personal confusion, uncertainty and later renewal. So, listen to Signed, Sealed and Delivered to explore the life and work of one of pop music's most compelling masters of invention. So there's another great audio book for you to listen to this week, folks. I hope you enjoyed the review. Let me know what you think of it if you do get a chance to have a listen. And as always, do get in touch and let us know whether there's any books that you would specifically like us to do a review of. Or why not get in touch should you fancy doing a review yourself. How about that? In the meantime, stay safe and take care and hope to speak to you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Steve. Time for our final local news roundup now with Ian.
A 101-year-old who was forced to shield at home for 3 months due to coronavirus has met her great-great-grandson for the first time. Dora Green, who lives in Tettenhall, was unable to leave home and had to avoid contact with others due to being at a higher risk from the virus. But now, following the change in government guidance due to infection rates falling, she has been able to see her newest family members. The change has led to her having her first socially distanced meeting with her two-week-old grandson, Thomas Joe, with five generations of her family coming together for the special moment. The 101-year-old said, "I've only ever been kept in the house by three things in my life: snow, World War II, and coronavirus." Dora, her 75-year-old daughter, Rosemary, 54-year-old granddaughter Julie, 28-year-old great-grandson Joe and great-great-grandson Thomas celebrated the special occasion.
A new crazy golf course featuring a terrifying T-Rex and more dinosaurs wreaking havoc has opened near Wolverhampton. Wolverhampton Adventure Golf, which will be based at Purton Golf Club, opened on Saturday. Mark Allen, director of Wolverhampton Adventure Golf, said, "We have built a large prehistoric themed adventure golf course based at Purton Golf Club. The site is about 1 acre and has 18 holes. We've got a 7 metre long T-Rex, a Stegosaurus, Triceratops, waterfalls, rapids and a Velociraptor on jeeps. It will be great family entertainment and will be suitable for all ages, not only children.
Disney characters visited children at Russell's Hall Hospital in Dudley to brighten their day last week. The staff wore matching face masks to their costumes as part of Disney Day. Karen Anderson, Head of Children's Services at the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We began holding themed days each month in our children's areas last year as a way of showing children that hospital can be fun and isn't something to be scared about. Obviously, we had to stop during the height of the coronavirus pandemic. Disney Day is one of our most popular, so we decided to relaunch with that as soon as we were able to. All of our staff on the ward take part and really go to town with their costumes, although this time we had to add in face masks and hadn't banked on it being the hottest day of the year so far. We have beach party and circus themes planned for later in the summer."
Marmoset twins have become Dudley Zoo's newest arrivals. The species is the world's smallest monkey, with mum, Pam, dad, Hendrix, and the pair doing well. Section leader Pat Stevens said, "Pat and Hendrix are very experienced parents, so are doing exactly what they should be doing, with dad doing the majority of carrying and the female feeding. We always do really well with the breeding of pygmy marmosets, so it's great to welcome a further two to the group, with our number currently at 17. Pygmy marmosets live in large groups consisting of a dominant adult breeding pair and their offspring of various ages. And the majority of captive births for the species are non-identical twins. The zoo's breeding success has enabled keepers to relocate many of its youngsters to animal collections across the UK and Europe to establish new groups of their own."
Two police forces in the Midlands and Shropshire have disclosed a number of reported UFO sightings they have received since 2017. In response to the Freedom Information request, Staffordshire Police said he'd received two reports, and West Mercia Police said he had three reports over the past 3 years. West Midlands Police has also been approached. The most notable accounts came from a member of the public from Huttlebury, near Kidderminster, who said they saw a line across the sky the size of 6 football pitches around midnight. Meanwhile, in Dorley, Telford, a member of the public said they saw a bright UFO that looked like a dinosaur during the afternoon. The government shut down its UFO desk, run by the Ministry of Defence, in 2009, meaning there's no longer an official body that can investigate these sightings. Instead, reports are sometimes made to the police.
West Midland folk dreaming of their big lottery win have revised their thoughts on how they would spend the money as a result of the coronavirus outbreak, according to a new survey. Exotic holidays, high-performance cars and high-adrenaline pursuits are out, while coastal cottages, camper vans and giving back to society are now at the top of the list. In a survey carried out by the National Lottery, 58% of people in the region said they had changed their wish list since the outbreak. And it seems that people are hoping for a gentler, more homely lifestyle if they win the lottery. Of those questioned about how a win would change their lives, 46% said keeping their nearest and dearest safe came out top, followed by reducing stress and worry, 39%, with a third saying it would help them live a healthier lifestyle. Buying a seaside retreat to enjoy sea views following lockdown was top on the list, identified by 18% of West Midlanders as their number one dream. In second place was a garden design project chosen by 12%, with the same number saying they would like to quit the rat race and buy a country retreat. A further 11% said they would like to invest in a camper van to explore the British Isles. Indoor activities of learning and education also featured in the top 10, with 10% wanting to be taught more cooking and baking skills, while 9% would like to learn another language to aid future foreign travel experiences. A notable feature of the survey was how much people wanted to give back to society, with 7% saying they would like to volunteer for a local charity or good cause. Demonstrating the West Midlands' entrepreneurial spirit, 10% said they would like to start a business, with gardening and care services featuring highly. But the survey found West Midland folk still had a desire for home entertainment and socialising where social distancing permits.
Once the dreams of a garden project had been fulfilled, 12% said they wished for a hot tub, while 10% dreamed of having their own pub or bar at the bottom of the garden. 1 in 10 said they would like to experience a drive-in cinema. West Midlands People's Lottery list is as follows: buying a seaside retreat, redesigning a garden, buying a home in the countryside, buying a hot tub for the garden, buying a camper van to explore the UK, learning how to cook and bake, starting a new business, and a drive-in cinema experience or garden pub and bar.
Thanks, Christine. There's more local news coming up for you next week, and news from our local football clubs is coming up for you in just a tick. But first, what's life like living in lockdown with sight loss? A new voice for you now, and a member of the Beacon team, it's Sharon.
Hi, my name is Sharon, and I am 54 years young. My sight loss journey started at 38 years of age, initially with diabetic retinopathy. After many treatments and operations, I also have macular degeneration, which is loss of central vision, in both eyes, a detached retina to the right eye, which was operated on but never the same after, cataracts to both eyes, and in November 2019, I was rushed to hospital very poorly to find I had glaucoma. So over the years, I have had to constantly adapt to my sight loss and find ways to try to do the things I wanted to do. My motto is, if I can find a way, I will. If not, I now ask for help. I used to have such an attitude of being fiercely independent, but came to the realisation that yet I do need support with certain things. 15 years on, I am now registered blind and still working in the sight loss sector for Beacon. I have a beautiful guide dog called Jeannie. She is blonde, nearly white, and is 5 years old. She looks like a baby seal and is very sociable. I work for Beacon in the Staffordshire team, and I also support clients with employment, so I am an employment coordinator. When COVID-19 struck and we had to work from home, it was a shock. For the first few weeks, I set up my little office in the kitchen on the table. Why did I choose the kitchen? Because it's where the kettle is. No, I'm only joking. It's because this is where the light is better in the house for me. I still get up at 6 a.m. as Jeannie wants her breakfast. Initially, she stood at the door waiting for us to go out to work, as we travelled quite a lot as part of our job. It was hard for Jeannie the first few weeks. I must admit it was hard for me too, not having the interactions with the people face to face. Isolation can hit people in many different ways, not being able to get out and about, talking to friends and family, interacting with people, just being able to pop down to the local shop can have massive effects. The fear of contracting COVID-19 and passing it on is a huge concern. I even stopped listening to the news reports on the television as I found I couldn't sleep at night. Calling people and receiving calls for support has kept me sane over the isolation period. Listening to other people's stories and how they have been affected by the changes in how we all live and sharing a problem solving together has given me an in-depth experience and more knowledge of what people really need and yearn for. A friendly call to people is uplifting. A chat is the start to building trust and showing people there are people out there who genuinely care. This is so important for people living in isolation. You can have family and friends, but still feel isolated in life.
Thanks, Sharon. And remember, if you need help living with sight loss, then please call the Beacon Centre on 01902 880111. You'll find the answers to this week's quiz next with This Week in History's Flashback Roger. Easy for you to say.
This is our flashback section, where we look at events that happened this week in history and where you will find the answers to the quiz questions set earlier. On June the 30th, 1967, the hot dog eating contest is held on what was designated the 100th anniversary of the invention of the hot dog. It was won by 28-stone Port Walter Paul, who was a 32-year-old truck driver who ate 127 dogs in 1 hour. June the 30th as well, in 1985, Yul Brynner, who starred in The King of Siam in Broadway's long-running show The King and I. The show came to an end on this day after he had made 4,625 performances. July the 1st, 1904, Forrest Edward Mars Sr. was born. This American candy maker was the inventor of M&Ms. They were designated so that soldiers could not get their trigger fingers sticky. If you believe that. Mars got the idea for the candy in the 1930s when he saw soldiers eating British-made Smarties during the Spanish Civil War. Mars received a patent for his process and began manufacturing them in 1941. And during World War II, the candies were only sold to the military, and the slogan, "Melts in your mouth, not in your hand," was introduced in 1949. July the 3rd, 1928, saw the first public demonstration of colour TV. The inventor, John Logie Baird, demonstrated his mechanical colour television in London. His system used scanning discs at the transmitting and receiving ends, with three spirals of apertures, each spiral with a filter of a different primary colour. It used three light sources at the receiving end. The demonstration was of Nolly Gordon, wearing different coloured hats. She went on, of course, to become a successful TV actress and famous for the soap opera Crossroads. July the 4th, 1862, while they were on a rowboat to have a picnic, 10-year-old Alice Liddell asked Charles Dodson, a.k.a. Lewis Carroll, to tell her and her sisters a story. He spun the story of a girl named Alice and her adventures when she fell down a rabbit hole. He then turned this into his famous book, Alice in Wonderland. On July the 5th, 1865, William Booth and his wife Catherine Booth founded a Christian mission in London. It was renamed the Salvation Army in 1878. And then on July the 6th, 1964, A Hard Day's Night, the first film to star and promote the Beatles, opened. It was screened in London at the Pavilion Theatre on the eve of Ringo's 24th birthday. Well, there you go. You'll be asked questions later, so I hope you've been paying attention. Bye for now.
Thanks, Roger. We'll run through all the answers a bit later on if you missed any of them. Now, mixed fortune for both Wolves and Albion over the weekend, and with news from our local football clubs, it's Ian.
Wolves are closing in on a Champions League place with a 1-0 victory against Aston Villa. Leander Dindonka scored his fifth goal of the season on his 50th appearance for Wolves and plunged Aston Villa deeper into relegation trouble. The Belgian international struck midway through the second half to earn a 1-0 win at Villa Park and close the gap on the top four. Wolves moved up to fifth in the Premier League, above Manchester United, and are just 2 points behind Chelsea after a third straight win. They maintained their 100% record following the league's resumption, keeping their seventh clean sheet in eight top-flight games. Wolves have won all three matches since the Premier League's restart. In contrast, Villa, winless since January, remain in the drop zone on goal difference, having played a game more than rivals Bournemouth, West Ham and Watford. Wolves rarely looked in danger, though, against the Villa team who had scored just twice in their previous five league games. Jack Grealish, who has now failed to score in his last nine matches, managed their only shot on target minutes before the break, but Rui Patricio was untroubled. Wolves began to find more space to put the hosts under some concerted pressure, and they were almost gifted an opener just before the break when Diogo Jota blasted over from 18 yards after an error from goalkeeper Nyland. Without a typical derby atmosphere, the game struggled to ignite, something both managers tried to change as John McGinn and Adama Traoré were introduced on the hour. And 2 minutes later, Traoré was involved in the build-up for Wolves to grab the winner. The winger found Jimenez on the left and his pinpoint pass spotted Johnny's deep run into the box. The wing back then teed up the onrushing Dendonka to drill in just his fifth goal of the season from the edge of the box. Wolves boss Nuno Espirito Santo, when asked how things have gone over the past week or so, Nuno said, "Fantastically well. But we know what is in front of us is very tough. So we know how we have done things. But now it's about how we prepare for the next one. We have to find new solutions and we have to reinvent ourselves for a tough challenge." Nuno is glad to have a full week of training at Compton and said, "This week is a week where we can review things and try to analyse. We haven't had much time on the training pitch, so it's about finding ways to pass the right information on to the players. There's always room to improve, always. The most difficult thing is to sustain your level of performance, sustain your standards and re-motivate yourself game after game. So let's keep on working." Wolves now have 6 fixtures left, with the next of those coming against Arsenal at Molineux on Saturday at 5:30 p.m. Slaven Bilic insists Albion aren't panicking about their lack of goals, but the head coach has warned his misfiring frontline they cannot rely on talent alone. The Baggies' 1-0 loss at Brentford on Friday means Bilic's side has now failed to score in their last 4 championship outings. A solitary goal from Ollie Watkins, now the championship's joint top scorer, was enough to secure the Bees a deserved victory at Griffin Park. The Baggies were particularly below par in the first half, but they improved after the break after Bilic introduced Filip Krovinovic and Kenneth Zohor and switched from a 4-2-3-1 system to 4-3-3. But in truth, they struggled to find any rhythm all evening, with the result seeing Brentford move up to 3rd in the table and back in the race for automatic promotion. But while Bilic isn't panicking, he has told his creative players they need to work harder. "Nobody's panicking, but we don't have to act like everything is cool," he said. "We have to do better. We have to be even more aggressive. We have to be better on the ball, express ourselves. Against Brentford, we didn't get into our rhythm. We couldn't impose ourselves. Yes, we have good players, but we must raise the level. We can't wait for it. We mustn't lose belief. But on the other hand, we have to be sharper in the box, more determined to come into the box. We have to make better runs. We have to make better opportunities. We can't keep going on like we're going to score. We're going to score like it's going to come by default. We have to get it back. It's not going to come by default." Meanwhile, reports have linked Albion with a move for former Manchester City goalkeeper Joe Hart. The Baggies are likely to be on the hunt for a new keeper to provide competition for Sam Johnstone in the summer. Hart, who came through the ranks at Shrewsbury, will be available on a free transfer after Burnley decided against extending his stay at Turf Moor beyond the current campaign. Alongside Albion, Celtic and Derby have been credited with an interest in Hart. Nathan Ferguson will leave Albion, the club has confirmed. Ferguson had been set to join Crystal Palace in January after the two clubs agreed an £11 million fee with a further £1 million in add-ons. But the move collapsed at the last minute when the London side picked up a problem with the defender's knee during his medical. While other clubs are interested, it is understood Palace are still front-runners to sign Ferguson, with the fee highly likely to be determined by a tribunal. Chris Brunt, Gareth Barry, Lee Peltier and Jonathan Bond, whose deals were due to expire this month, have all agreed to contract extensions to stay until the end of the season. Goalkeeper Ali Al-Habzi, however, has left the Hawthorns after deciding not to extend his terms. Albion play Sheffield Wednesday away on Wednesday the 1st of July, followed by Hull at home on Sunday the 5th of July with a 3 p.m. kickoff.
Thanks, Ian. We'll continue to keep you posted as the season continues right here on the Black Country Talking News. But now, let's run through all the answers to this week's quiz with Mina.
So, how did you get on? I'm sure you did brilliantly. Remember, all of our questions are from our flashback section and based on events that happened on this week in history. So, let's go through the answers. Question 1. How many hot dogs did Walter Paul eat in a hot dog eating contest on 30th of June 1967? And the answer is 127. But he had them on slimming bread without any sauce because he was on a diet. I don't think so. Question two. Who starred in the long-running show The King and I? The answer is Yul Brynner. Question three. What was the surname of the man who invented M&Ms? The answer here is Mars. Question four. In what year, on the 3rd of July, was the first public demonstration of colour television? The answer here is 1928. Question five. What was the real name of Lewis Carroll, author of Alice in Wonderland? And the answer here is Charles Dodgson. And finally, question six. In what year, on 6th of July, was the Beatles film Hard Day's Night first screened? The answer is 1964. In the cast, amongst others, were Wilfred Bramble, John Junkin, Derek Giler. Oh, and the Beatles themselves. We'll have another quiz for you next week, but there's a brain teaser coming up now, and I hope you're ready for that. And I'll be back in a minute with the weather.
In a minute? No, not in a minute. You're on next, Mina. Quick, compose yourself, get ready. Anyway, with pollen and UV levels, plus the weather for the weekend and week ahead. Oh, and how much daylight will there be too? That matters as well. It's back to you.
The sunrise and sunset times for next week are sunrise 4:53 a.m, sunset at 21:33 p.m. For the weekend and week ahead, at the moment it looks mainly dry with temperatures around 20 degrees. On Friday 3rd of July, a slightly cooler day with light cloud and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 17 degrees with medium UV and pollen levels. Saturday, we're looking at 4th of July, is American Independence Day. We have light cloud and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees with medium UV levels. On Sunday 5th of July, we have sunny intervals with a moderate breeze and a maximum temperature of 20 degrees, UV levels at medium. Moving on to Monday 6th of July, the same with sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with maximum temperatures of 20 degrees and UV levels again at medium. Tuesday 7th of July, a little warmer with sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 22 degrees and UV levels at medium. On Wednesday 8th of July, we have again sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 22 degrees and UV levels at medium. And finally, Thursday 9th of July, same again, sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 22 degrees with medium UV levels. Enjoy the weather.
I will, Mina. Thank you very much for that. Stay safe and we'll see you next week. Now with an update of what's happening at Beacon this week, here's Helen.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre here with your weekly roundup of news from the charity. We hope you're all keeping well and managed to enjoy a little of a warmer weather last week, although it certainly was a little hot at times, wasn't it? It's recently been National Employability Day, and here at the Beacon Centre, we run several projects to help support those looking to get on the pathway to employment. At Beacon, we believe that sight loss shouldn't hold you back from entering the workplace. And over the past few months, our employment teams have been working harder than ever to help ensure that that's the case. Despite the pandemic, we've helped people find work during lockdown. But we don't just support people with job applications, although we've helped with more than 50 in the past few weeks. We make food bank referrals, get people access to training courses, and offer digital support to help people keep in touch. To mark National Employability Day, we put together our top tips to improve your employability. And here they are. 1. Make sure your CV is up to date and you have a covering letter. A CV is the first thing an employer considers. 2. Keep learning. Personal development is highly valued by employers. 3. Prepare for interview. Practice answering questions. Have you done your research? Do you look presentable? Would you hire you? Volunteer is 4. Volunteering gives valuable work experience and plugs any gaps of unemployment. It may even help with a reference. And finally, 5, get support. Enroll with a professional support project such as those run by the Beacon Centre and improve your employability. The Building Better Opportunities Bridges and Evolve Employment projects are funded by the European Social Fund and the National Lotteries Community Fund. If you think you could benefit from employment support, contact the Beacon Centre. You can call us on 01902 880 111. It was also National Sunglasses Day recently, very timely given the recent weather. To stop UV-related eye damage, sunglasses should become part of your routine if you're out and about. Did you know that nearly half of all cases of sight loss are preventable? It's good to encourage people to make sure they wear their sunglasses out and about. Now, you may remember last week we told you about our amazing member Carl, who's doing a sponsored shave in aid of a Beacon Centre because of the fantastic support he's received from the charity. He's already raised £100 and will shave off his lockdown beard as a result. But if he can get to £200, he'll shave his head as well. And £300 will even shave his eyebrows. To make a donation on his Just Giving page, click on the link www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Carl's Big Shave. And that's Carl with a C, Big Shave. He's doing a shave on July the 4th, so you'll need to be quick if you want to support him. And please note that Just Giving automatically suggests donating £10, £20 or £30. However, it's up to you how much you want to donate. Just type the donation amount into the box. And in other exciting news, we are delighted to reveal that we've launched our first ever virtual raffle. Things may be a little different this year with staycations and smaller barbecues, but it hasn't stopped us launching our summer raffle with fabulous prizes on offer, all designed to help you enjoy the glorious weather. For just £2 per raffle number, you'll be in with a chance to win one of three unique prizes, courtesy of our friends at Parnaby Saddlery, Barclays Sedgley, AF Blakemore & Sons, and Dudley Canal and Tunnel Trust. Even better than that, you'll be helping to raise funds for Beacon as well. You can find out how to take part on our Just Giving page, which is www.justgiving.com/campaign/Beacon Summer Raffle. Please share with your friends, family, neighbours and colleagues and help us keep supporting people living with sight loss. Taking part in our summer raffle is really simple. Just click on the link that I gave you and follow the instructions on the page. The raffle will be drawn on the 3rd of August, so there's plenty of time to join in. Full terms and conditions apply. Please let us know if you'd like to have a copy of them. You can get in touch on 01902 880 111 or email at supporters@beaconvision.org. Now, we'd like to thank everyone who's made a donation to our charity shop over the past couple of weeks. Your support is really appreciated. We've received so much stock though that we've run out of space to store it, and as a result we can't accept the following items at the moment: toys, books and bric-a-brac. You can find out more about how best to donate to Beacon via our website, www.beaconvision.org/charity-shop-donations. Thanks, and we'll speak to you all next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Helen. And thank you once again for listening to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to or just say hello to, maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch via bctn@beaconvision.org or calling us at the Beacon Centre on 01902 880111. We'd love to hear from you. Have a good week, stay safe, and we'll be back next week. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, here's Pete with your brain teaser for next week.
So, a brain teaser to finish. Are you ready? This one might test you. Okay, here we go. Over the side of a boat is hanging a rope ladder, with the end just touching the water. Now, the tide rises at a rate of 20 centimetres per hour. The rungs of the ladder are 30 centimetres apart. So, at the end of 5 hours, with the tide rising steadily all the time, how many rungs of the rope ladder will be underwater? So, I'll give you that again. Over the side of a boat is hanging a rope ladder with the end just touching the water, and the tide rises at a rate of 20 centimetres per hour. The rungs of the ladder are 30 centimetres apart, and at the end of 5 hours, with the tide rising steadily all the time, how many rungs of the rope ladder will be underwater? Now there's the thing. As always, we'll tell you the answer next week.
So that's it for another edition of Black Country Talking News. If you would like to contact us, you can do so by calling us on 01902 880111, emailing us at bctn@beaconvision.org, or send a letter to Black Country Talking News, Beacon Centre, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers, who without their support we'd be unable to run this free service. So it's goodbye from all of us, and please note that the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News, and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods or services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors.